Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
3, 2, 1.
Here we go. Amazing Earthlings, welcome to the fourth episode of Shifting the Paradigm. We've got an awesome show for you today, so please feel free to pop in any questions for the live chat. Also, guess what? After a year of this Paradigm Shifts channel, I have finally made a Patreon. Definitely check it out. The link is below with a bunch of goodies and benefits that you can do to support me and the channel. I have a bunch of awesome projects I want to work on, but being a self-funded college student, it's not that easy. So who will be the first to become a member? Huh? Anyways, it's Friday, and that means it's time to get this live cast going. So our guest is Ryan Sprague. I really hope I said that right. I'm sweaty. Oh my gosh. Who is an author, podcaster, UFO and researcher, a writer for The Debrief, and a co-host to a hit TV show, Mysteries Decoded, coming in with a third season. Please welcome Ryan.
Hi, Christina. Thank you so much for having me. And hey, I'm raising my hand. I want to be your first Patreon subscriber. So I'm calling it right now. I know what it's like to be a struggling college student. So,
dude. Eating ramen all day.
Are you kidding me? I've been out of college for like 10 years and I've got ramen over here. So those things never change.
No, but you know what? Ramen, like, it grows on you and it's kind of good after a while.
Absolutely. Especially when you do it right. You know, you get all the vegetables and the hard-boiled egg. And great. It's great.
Oh, yeah. Yep. But this is not a food channel. This is a UFO channel. Yeah. So
welcome to the ramen hour.
We'll skip the ramen for later. So for viewers that are not familiar with you, can you just tell us a brief history about your involvement in the UFO topic? Just like a really quick rundown.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do apologize in advance. I live in New York City, so you're going to hear sirens and car horns. Gives it some ambiance. But yes, I've been involved with the UFO topic since I was 12 years old. I had an initiation experience, I guess you could call it. I had a UFO sighting of a triangular formation of lights over a body of water in central New York. I didn't see a structure. I just saw a formation of lights, but it was huge. It was massive. It was silent and it scared me. And actually my father saw the tail end of this UFO sighting with me. So I did have another witness to corroborate that at least I wasn't crazy. and yeah, I was kind of terrified. After that, I had nightmares about those lights, and it became an obsession. I started going to the library, reading UFO books, and then eventually hopping on the early forums and chat rooms of AOL for UFOs and aliens, and interviewed my first witness when I was 13, a year later. It was a Vietnam veteran who had a UFO sighting over the Pacific Ocean, and it's been a crazy ride ever since. I interview witnesses and experiencers. That's kind of my thing. I'm all about the human side of this entire weird mystery that we find ourselves wrapped up in. And write for the Debrief, do television, do podcasts, do all of it. It's a ball. I love it.
Oh my gosh. And you talked about nightmares. But before we say that really quick, thank you, Ice Hawk, for subbing to the Patreon. You're awesome. I'm so
excited.
Beat
me to it.
Oh, thank you. So we're talking about your story, and after you saw your sighting, you talked about nightmares. Why do you think you were having that, and what were your nightmares about, if you want to talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. It was basically just a replay of what I remembered that night. I mean, to be honest, it was so long ago, like there's a lot I don't remember, and memory is fallible. I'm the first to admit that. But I remember the lights, and I remember it being silent. I remember having this weird vibration going through my body. Again, I don't know if it was because of what I was seeing or if it was fear or what was going on, but I couldn't move. I was frozen where I was. I was on a dock overlooking the water and I couldn't move. I couldn't talk. I felt paralyzed in a way. And took me like a few minutes to even get a little squeal out for my dad to come out and see what was going on. So I just had nightmares about the lights, just staring at them, looking at them, wondering why they were there, what they were doing. And to this day, I still don't have answers to what it was. But, you know, after I started educating myself on the topic and learning that I wasn't the only one seeing these things, the fear kind of, you know, dissipated. And I just became obsessed and kind of embraced that part of my life. And yeah, now I'm a professional ufologist, if there is such a thing.
It's pretty exciting. I mean, the thing about ufology is that it's ever changing. Like, no one has that one right answer. So
exactly.
And a lot of us have that kind of like some kind of experience, but yours is so wild at such a young age. And for your first experience, I mean, that's something that you'll never forget.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's and it's kind of the only one. I've seen some lights in the sky, but that was it for me. And that's enough. I'm okay if I never see another UFO again. It's not going to change anything. I'm still entrenched in this every day. So yeah.
Wow. So, right out of the gate, I want to ask you, what's your take on the current state of the UFO disclosure, the 180-day report, and the recent photos and footage releases?
Yeah, I mean, so I'll start with the photos and I guess the videos by George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell. They are extremely compelling. I thought the reporting done by both of these individuals was as good as it could be for the information they were given. It's so hard in this field, you know, especially working with a debrief. We do deal with anonymous sources, and that's tough as a reader, as a investigator, as a skeptic, to be like, yeah, we have to take the word that this outlet did talk to this person and they said this. But I trust these individuals, George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell. I know they vetted these individuals that brought these things to them. I know they did their homework, and they're working off of the limited data and evidence that they were given. So the photos I thought were pretty interesting. You know, we broke that first photo over at the debrief, and then George Knapp comes back with more of them, which was awesome. As for what's in those photos, I couldn't pretend to know. I am under the impression that we might be dealing with some sort of balloons or drone activity. I can't dismiss that. Or we could be dealing with a craft from another planet. We just don't have enough data and evidence at this point. As for the video, I found it very intriguing. The quote unquote pyramid that's been just exploding around the world right now.
Yeah.
Again, working on limited data, but Jeremy gave us some context. He said these photos that Knapp had and that he got, that these were, how would you say, they were tests that this task force, Pentagon task force, was using to try to be like, let's see what people say, what they think it is. And eventually they made their way out to the public somehow, some way. I can't pretend to know how. But yeah, as for the task force report, I was very excited when it first came around. But I am slowly tempering my expectations, especially after that Politico article came out where, you know, we heard that the Air Force was kind of stiff-arming the Pentagon task force and saying, yeah, we're not giving you anything. And all these other intelligence agencies kind of ignoring them. That says two things to me. One, there's probably some highly sensitive national security issues that they cannot divulge, which is understandable. And two, there's still a stigma and ridicule attached to this. There always will be. So a lot of it is probably these people not wanting to share what they have because they're afraid that it's going to come back to them. So, you know, will we get that report in June for the public? Maybe. I have a good feeling it's probably going to be delayed, just like many of these reports often are. But I'm holding out hope that maybe we'll get something. Hey, anything. Anything is better than what we have now. So I just look at it as a win-win. We have a Pentagon task force. That's crazy. I never thought I would be saying that, you know, in a conversation right now. So, yeah, whatever comes of it, be as annoying. I'm excited. Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, yeah, me too. I mean, regardless of what it is, and we probably might already know that information because we're so heavily involved in this community. But for like the regular people, the everyday, you know, businessmen, they might be interested. And maybe that could be the changing point of people's mentalities to be asking the right questions versus just saying, oh, yeah, there's aliens. That's cool. And then leave it there. Which is very common for our generation, especially because a lot of us grew up with internet from a young age and we're like, yeah, aliens are real. Like that's without a doubt. But they don't ask, what are they doing here? Why? Where are they from? What do they want? They're just like, yeah, just take me with you while you're there.
we could use that right now, I think. You're right. Like, abduct me now. You know, not to make light of the abduction phenomenon, but yeah, now would be a better time to leave than ever before. But you bring up so many good points. Like, the government has acknowledged UFOs exist. That's more than we've gotten in 70 plus years, which is amazing. But like you said, now the hard questions. What are they? Where do they come from? What do they want? And why are they here? Whatever that they is. And it's probably not one thing. So, yeah, I think you're right. The hard questions start now. But I have so much hope, like you said, for the younger generation, because they do take alien life as a yes, of course, it has to. Like we know that by now. So, you know, kind of the Gen X generation, I would say, it's my job to educate the younger people of what has happened and let them take the torch and run with it. So that's what this field is. Like, it's a constant passing of torches. My mentor, a gentleman named Peter Robbins, has been incredible in educating me on this topic and learning and respecting the history. And then I build off of that and then move on. So, yeah, it's exciting. We're shifting the paradigm, as it were.
Thank you for putting that in there.
You're
I didn't
welcome.
Pay you, but I appreciate it. Well, also with the 180 report, we also have the Big Phone Home, which is coming out in next week, you know, the 24th with Luis and his whole team. And then you have the UAP Act Now with James Fox and his website. And so what are your thoughts on that, these people making these kinds of movements?
I think it's incredible. Again, like grassroots sort of activism happening. You know, and we've seen similar things in the past, but not to this extent. Like you said, these are tech savvy people using the internet to their advantage to reach people all across the world. So you look at like the Big Phone Home, it started as like this one little thing here in the United States and is now branched off to other countries, England, to be more specific, with the UAP Media UK group, who are now getting involved and going to also be phoning members of parliament over there. So I think it's so cool what Luis has put together. And
well, tell him yourself. He's here.
I'm his biggest fan. I've been subscribed to him almost since day one. But I think it's awesome. And he's so passionate about it. And he really put this thing together well and got some awesome names in there. Elizondo, Chris Mellon, members of the SCU, the Scientific Coalition for UAP Studies, and the website looks amazing, and it's just awesome. So I highly suggest everyone go thebigphonehome.com. There's my plug, Luis, and check it out, because I think April 24th, yep, we're going to just be going nuts, calling Congress members and representatives and just, you know, not saying, give us answers. Like, we want to work with you. We want to tell you what's up with this topic, and you should probably look into it and tell your other representatives. So, yeah, I think it's really cool. Same with James Fox and UAP Act Now. Both of these organizations have like a template letter that you can just copy and paste, put your name in there, and send it off to your representatives, which is awesome. You don't have to do anything. It's like so little work to make such a profound change. So, yeah.
And you're also making a change. You just had your latest book, and it talks and it has UFO sighting testimonies from military witnesses, amongst others. Can you tell the viewers about the book, and maybe if you have a particular story of interest that you want to tell us about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I came out with a book in 2016, which was all about, you know, everyday, all walks of life, individuals having UFO experiences and how it affected them and what was the aftermath of the event. Like, what did their family think of them claiming an abduction experience or a close encounter of the third kind? And I had a couple military witnesses in that original version as well. But I came out with a second edition of the book little less than a year ago, and I expanded. I interviewed more people, and a lot of those were military witnesses, which is what we're hearing a lot about now, especially with all the stuff going on with the Pentagon and the Navy. So I found some new military witnesses who were willing to go on the record for the very first time ever with their experiences, having been empowered by all these other people, whether it's the Tic Tac event or GoFasts. Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off, but can you tell us what the book is called?
Of course. Yeah. It's called Somewhere in the Skies, A Human Approach to the UFO Phenomenon. And again, these military people, while they have a very specific job, and we kind of look at them as kind of the be all end all of trained observers, they're human and they're just like us. And a lot of them don't know what they're seeing. So I interviewed a bunch of those people and again, how it affected their lives. And I'll make this brief. One of the more dramatic ones that I came across was a gentleman who was in the Air Force. He was a bomb loader and a weapons technician. His name is Larry. He lives in North Dakota. And back in 2003, he witnessed what he described as a diamond-shaped craft that came down from the sky right above his house. His wife saw this as well. And she actually saw it first. She was outside smoking. She yelled for him to come out. And this was one of the closest encounters I've ever heard. They said the thing came down so low that they could see strips of lights on the diamond. They could see windows. They could see window panes and things moving around in this craft. It was silent. It made no noise. And then all of a sudden, this just like explosion boomed, almost like a sonic boom sound happened. And the thing shot off out of sight and was gone in a matter of seconds. Larry was a sheriff in the town that he lived in Sheridan County. So he was kind of afraid of doing anything about this and going forward. In fact, his superiors told him, don't. Like, he told a couple people and they're like, nah, we don't need the sheriff of the town saying he saw little green men or anything like that. So he didn't talk about it for a long time. And he finally came forward in an article I had written previously and in my book. And he told me, like, thank you. Like, just thank you for letting me get it out there. And that's kind of how I look at what I do, interviewing witnesses. I'm not here to tell them what they saw or, to figure out all the answers. I'm there to listen. And I'm there when a lot of people aren't. And I'm not going to make fun of them. So for Larry, I think that was kind of closure. And to kind of, I guess, bookend the story, Larry was featured in Unidentified, the television show on the History Channel. And former Pentagon official Luis Elizondo actually went and met with Larry and went to the site where this happened and talked to him all about it. And it was so cool, like seeing this all kind of come full circle for Larry. He's being vindicated not only like in book form, but now by the former head of a secret Pentagon UFO program.
Yeah, A-tip, crazy.
It's amazing. And Larry said, like, I didn't think anyone else saw this, but Luis Elizondo was there to tell him, we have another witness who saw it. So again, it just vindicated this guy so much. And I talked to Larry up until this day, and it's awesome. I've made so many friends and colleagues through doing this, and Larry is one of them for sure.
And where can people buy your books, plural?
Yeah, the books are on Amazon, where else? Pretty much anywhere, Barnes & Noble. It's available in paperback, ebook, and now in audiobook too, which is pretty cool hearing how someone else interprets the story. I wasn't about to do it. I was not about to do my own audiobook. I was too insecure for that. But yeah, it's available on Amazon and all of those, and at my website too, somewhereintheskies.com.
So also, what made you go in this direction? Because you have two different books, one for witnesses, one that's more military witness based, right? So as opposed to your other book project, was it just like a natural theme of evolution, or why did you change your dynamic?
That's a really good question. And there was a very clear distinction between the books. While I consider it a second edition, it was like 80,000 new words. So it was basically a new book. And there was a huge evolution in thought, whether from me or these witnesses. 2016 and then 2020, in between that was the biggest story in the world in the New York Times, where we learned about the Pentagon program, where we learned about the Navy UFO sightings. And this topic kind of exploded into the mainstream like never before. So I wanted to not only bring more new stories in the new version, I wanted to go back and revisit the people I'd interviewed in the first book. Like, has anything happened since then? That's another thing with these UFO things. We see them on the news and it's like something weird happened in, you know, Detroit, Michigan tonight. This is what they saw. And then we never hear about it again. But people have follow-up experiences all the time. And I thought it was important to go back and see if that happened and how people's thoughts may have changed on what they experienced. And if they were more willing to talk about it now, since the whole world seemed to be talking about it. So it was a very exciting evolution. And it couldn't have come at a better time. I wish that article had come out just a few months before so I didn't have to write a second one, but I did.
And it paid off, right? I mean, it's worth having another book out there on the shelves, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm a writer. That's what I do. I'm a playwright here in New York City. That's like not my bread and butter. I wish it was. Theater is not really going on right now in the world, if anyone has noticed, but it's what I do. It's my other passion. So I'm a playwright by day and a ufologist by night, I guess.
And this is, related to your playwriting. I didn't know that. What theme do you write? What do you like to write about when it comes to plays? Is it aliens?
I wish. And actually, I have tried somewhat successfully. I did write a short play about the 1980 Rendlesham Forest UFO incident. And I actually won a couple play competitions with it. So apparently, thank you. Some people liked it. And again, there's not many plays anywhere on Broadway or like the smallest theater in some small town about UFOs and aliens. So again, if I can contribute something new to theater or the discussion on UFOs, I feel like I've done something. So I usually write dramas, very, very powerful, impactful, small casts where you can really put a microscope on a certain character. And that's kind of ultimately led to what I do in my books. Is I took what I learned in playwriting, which was about your play has to be about the character's most important part in their life. Otherwise, why are we being dropped into their world right now? And they have to change throughout the course of the play. So I wanted to be like, okay, that's cool. How can I infuse that into my UFO work? And again, a UFO sighting or close encounter can be a very pivotal part of someone's life and clearly change their life. So I wanted to take what I learned in playwriting and put it into my writing. And I guess it worked because people seem to really dig it. I'm working on a new one right now, and it spawned my podcast as well. So I'm very thankful for my theater upbringing and how it's gotten to me where I am today.
That is so cool. That's such a cool story. Do you think that your playwrights might become a movie and then kind of be like the next Travis Walton kind of movie?
I hope so. Full disclosure, I wrote a feature-length play about the Travis Walton experience, and I turned it in college, and my playwriting instructor told me to throw it in the trash. So it needed a lot of work, but it's there if I ever want to revisit it. But yeah, I do think I think there's a place for it, and I think I can hopefully fill that void and bring something new to the stage. Who doesn't want to see like a UFO land on a Broadway stage? Come on. We've got Phantom of the Opera. We've got helicopters swooping in and Miss Saigon, the musical. Like, let's get a UFO musical out there and see what happens.
How are your friends and family? How is their reaction to your interest in this? And even being on your own TV show, Mysteries Decoded?
When I first started talking about it back when I was like 13, 14, it was rough. Like, my friends made fun of me. my parents told me not to talk about it. I'd bring it up at like family birthday parties and they'd tell me to shut up. And I was the crazy one, the kooky kid in the family. And that kind of followed me for a while. I remember early in my playwriting days, I had a website where I like shared my playwriting work and my UFO work. And I was told by a lot of people in the industry, don't do that. Like, you're going to lose work and lose respect if you have all this weird UFO stuff on there. And unfortunately, I took what they said and I separated my two lives. But, you know, again, it's bigger than ever. It's more accepted than ever. So I think not just for the witnesses in my books, but for me as a UFO researcher, ever since that 2017 article, like it has empowered me to just be loud and proud about this stuff, as it has many other individuals too. So yeah, it's definitely evolved throughout the years. And I remember, you know, sitting down at a local bar with my dad in Syracuse, New York, and finally talking about that UFO sighting with him and really hashing it out. And that was a big moment for me, you know, for your parents to be like, don't talk about it, it's crazy, to now texting me every time there's a mainstream media article about UFOs is awesome. And they come to like see me at conferences and speak and stuff. And I think they're really coming around and being like, huh, there's something to this. And maybe he's not as crazy as we thought.
Well, these conferences, you know, you always got to have a cup of Joe, right? Or like something to drink. And I know that you have a coffee brand, which is definitely not a common kind of merchandise to have. And you also have a whole website dedicated to it. So I want to know about your coffee. Why are you selling coffee? And what makes your coffee better than Starbucks? Which is not even good coffee. So nice. You already won.
Yeah, right. I'm not corporate. I know I can tell you that much. But
not yet.
I hope someday. I when I'm not playwriting and stuff, I was a barista, a specialty barista. So I grew a huge respect for coffee and roasting. I worked at a Sasquatch themed coffee shop in LA for about 2 years before moving back to New York City. And that really taught me like how to know what a good coffee is. So I was actually contacted by a listener of my podcast who was opening his own coffee roasting place in Arizona. And we went back and forth about stuff. And I told him, hey, man, I'm really into coffee. I just downed a cup before we got on this call. So I'm sorry if I'm like a little hyper, but I love coffee. I absolutely love it. So we came up with the idea to have a Somewhere in the Skies coffee. It's a dark, bold roast, which is kind of what I envision of what I saw back in 95. It was just a dark void with these triangular lights, and that kind of stuck with me. So it's a dark, bold, Somewhere in the Skies coffee roast, and it's through a awesome veteran-owned coffee place in Arizona called Black Triangle Coffee. So I hope people will check it out. Tell me what they think about it, and let's get caffeinated.
Let's get caffeinated.
There's especially, a pitch,
especially for those night vision. I mean, night sky watches. You gotta have a cup of coffee.
Absolutely.
And now we know where to get it from Ryan.
So, thank you.
So with all these different types of work that you do on this topic, where is your passion most concentrated? Like, what do you focus the most on? Because you do a lot. You do a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not what I would say is like an investigator. I always try to make that clear to people. I'm not like boots on the ground chasing after flying saucers out there. Like, I leave that to the very dedicated field investigators in all these independent UFO organizations. I love writing. I always have. I always will. And I love people. So I really think that what I bring to this topic is a very human approach, like the subtitle of my book. I really think that whatever lay at the heart of this mystery, ultimately it reflects back on us. It says more about us as humans than it does whatever we're dealing with these phenomena. So I want to constantly put that mirror back on ourselves of what we're experiencing, what each individual thinks they experience, not what someone else tells them they saw or did not see. And I love people. And I love conversations. And I love learning and listening. So yeah, I think that's what I bring to this field is a listening ear and a levity too. Like this stuff's weird. It's really weird and ridiculous sometimes. So again, if I can like talk to a person and we can laugh about it, that's good too. Because if you take yourself too seriously in this field, you are going to be so let down and so miserable because none of us have the answers, but we're going to keep trying.
And you're also, I mean, you're passionate about writing. You have your own, you write your own plays, you make your own coffee, but you also write for The Debrief. And you wrote an article today of an overview of the Scientific Coalition petitioning the U.S. Congress for UFO information. Can you go over that for us and maybe just kind of tell us what it's about in a nice summary?
Yeah, absolutely. So I, again, I work with individuals within this Scientific Coalition. Most notably, the co-founder, a gentleman named Robert Powell, who has previously worked for MUFON for many years, has done some incredible analysis of UFO videos with the Tic Tac event, the Puerto Rico Aguadilla Airport UFO event, which if any of your viewers and listeners aren't familiar with, please go check it out. It's way better than the other Navy videos. I'm just going to say that right now. But they do an incredible breakdown of these videos. And it's a group of scientists, independent civilian scientists who don't work for the government and want to know what's going on too. So again, this whole Pentagon Task Force thing is very tight-lipped. And we understand that to an extent. There's national security issues and it's the government. So what this coalition wants to do is show the government and the task force, we have so many scientists who could help you with what you're doing, because what we're seeing right now with this task force is not much. Again, like we're getting leaked stuff that they're looking into and they're not coming up with any explanations or theories. Whereas this coalition has a pretty damn good idea about a lot of the things that the task force is looking at. So they petitioned an open letter to Senator Marco Rubio and Mark Warner and the Senate Intelligence Committee and everyone in between to say, let's work together. We have so many brilliant, talented minds in our coalition, in the public, that can help you. Like, let's do this. Let's work together. Stop being so secretive and whatnot. So I wrote the article about that. I have very high hopes that something will come of it. And again, it's just another group getting involved in telling Congress, we need to look into this issue. So yeah, I hope people will check it out over on my Medium page. And yeah, it's awesome. I'm excited.
And for everyone that wants to see the article, Eyes on the Skies shared the link in the live chat. So save that to read later after this podcast is over, but not right now, because that would be rude, right? So, given all the time spent on this topic, if you had your best speculation opinion on what is the origin of these things, aside from any conventional explanation, what would it be? Do you think it's off-world? Do you think it's other dimensional? What are your thoughts on that?
Everything. And I know that's kind of a passive answer, but anytime I'm asked that question, which is a very valid question, I change my mind. Because every single day, something new happens where I'm like, nope, it flips the script and I don't know what's going on. One day, I think it's us from the future coming back, time travelers looking to see what's going on and how they can back to the future this stuff to make sure whatever happens in the future doesn't. And then the next day, for me, it's interdimensional. And then the next, it's aliens. So I think that's why UAP is such a brilliant term of phenomena. In the days of UFOs are kind of gone because there's such a baggage and stigma with that term that was coined by the U.S. Air Force, of all things, to downplay the weirdness of this issue. I think UAP is awesome. I think there's a million answers to what we're dealing with. And what we're seeing in these videos being given to us by Corbell and Knapp and The Debrief, and will we ever know? I honestly couldn't tell you, but I love chasing this mystery. And if I don't find the answers, that's fine. I'm totally okay with that.
And it definitely pulls you in all different directions. I mean, like, you can never really be up to date with this topic because there's so many little nitpicks here and there, and yet they all kind of come together. But I want to get back to your book and the military witnesses. Have you felt that they're being more brave talking about their experiences because the UAP situation is being more validated, much more in the media these days?
Yes, absolutely. I'm working on a big story right now, both for in print form and in podcast form, about a Navy serviceman who only came forward and reached out to me because of the Tic Tac event. When he saw these other Navy witnesses, these Top Gun pilots, these chief radar operators coming forward and saying, I saw this, I experienced it. We don't know what it was. We were told not to talk about it and move on. This guy I'm talking to had 5 separate dramatic triangular UFO sightings over a military installation, which is crazy. He tried reporting the first one, and he was told to stop drinking. So, of course, after that, he's not going to talk about it. But I've tracked down another witness who was there one of the nights this guy saw this. I've had hour-long conversations with the base, public affairs. I've been talking to the Pentagon spokesperson about this specific event and working with Tim McMillan over at the debrief to try to figure out what this was. So again, that's really all I can share about it, but it is a prime example of someone coming forward because of the people before them who are willing to do it and kind of pave the way for them, which I think is so cool. Like, again, this guy that came forward, he kept it inside for decades because he was afraid of what people would think. And then, boom, out of nowhere, I get this email where he has the time and date of every single event. So clearly, this affected him so much that he wrote all of this down, detailed the time and date and everything about each individual incident, which was extremely helpful for me when I went to do a FOIA request and talk to the base and be like, yo, you can't deny this. I've got times, dates, and when this happened. Yes, it's one guy saying it, but we need to look into this. And I'm doing all the work for you. Just tell me if you have anything on this or not. So, yeah, I think it's very important.
And what about witnesses from other nations, maybe retired pilots or military people? Have you had any stories or experiences related to you from people abroad the U.S.?
Yes, I've had stories shared with me in the UK, a lot of events, actually. Not so much military, but a lot of civilian witnesses, a lot of triangular UFO sightings, which is really exciting because that's kind of the big thing right now. Triangles coming out of the ocean, pyramids flying over, you know, Navy carriers. But nothing's coming to mind militarily about other nations. I have only really explored that here in the US, but I'm sure they're out there. And if anyone's watching or listening wants to reach out to me about it, please do. I'd love to hear their stories.
And in your book, do you have accounts of international witnesses?
Yeah, absolutely. The book spans every continent, incidents all over the world. And again, different cultures and beliefs and everything in between. So I think that's awesome. Like, one man's UFO is another's, like, machine with a demon riding on it is another man's fairy. It's so cool to see, like, the lens in which these individuals look through these experiences. So, yeah, we've gone international when it comes to UFOs, for sure.
Well, hopefully your book will inspire more to come forward, because it's a big deal and I think it should be talked about. And I can imagine another press club meeting in the future, maybe where they'll get a lot more publicity with such witnesses. But what do you think on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think now is a better time than any. We have the ears and the eyes of Congress members. And that's so rare. It only happens every once in a while. We have like a mock congressional hearing, the citizens hearing on disclosure. I want to say back in like the mid 2000s, which was cool. But like, again, what came of it? Not much. But now that we actually have individuals who worked in Congress are now out in the public, and, you know, members like Christopher Mellon and Luis Elizondo saying we need to look into this, we have to use that to our advantage. So I do see congressional hearings in the future, but this task force is a big deal. And this report upcoming, no matter what we get or don't get, it's a big deal. Like, this is a historic moment. And whether you think it's cool or not, it's going to make waves. It is. I really think that.
And did you ever look into the Brazilian Varginha encounters in 1996? What's your opinion on that case?
Yes. Correct me if I'm wrong. Was that a close encounter experience?
Mm-hmm.
Varginha. Yes. Oh my gosh. It's been so long. You might have to help me with this one.
Oh, come on. You know this. You know this.
Who was the guy? Was it Antonio something?
That was involved? I'm not too familiar with the name.
Yeah.
Now you're putting me on the spot. I meant to put you on the spot.
Oh, Ryan. Man. I know. We're failing. We're failing at shifting the paradigm.
Well, here's the thing. There are so many cases. I mean, I can totally respect the fact that it's hard to, like, get all the names and places set just because there are so many. New ones are coming out from back in the day, and the new ones are coming out for the ones that are going to happen tomorrow. You know, we're never up to date. Never up to date.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, they all kind of start to blend together for me, which is unfortunate. But you're right. I'm terrible with names and dates. Like, even in my own book, I've got like a list of the date when it happened in front of me just in case. But yeah, that one's not ringing a bell. And I know there's going to be people watching and listening who are like, come on.
Come on. Guys.
He ain't no UFO researcher. If I'm mistaken, this was the one where a UFO landed and a creature was possibly seen. I could be completely wrong about this. So if I'm bringing up another case, I apologize.
Well, you know what? What? The undead gaucho has got you covered. You know what he says?
Oh my gosh.
He's got you. He says, the stories were hyped in the media at... Oh, just kidding. I read the wrong one. So the Varginha UFO incident involves a series of events in 1996 when various citizens of Varginha, I hope I'm saying it right, Brazil, reported seeing one or more strange creatures and at least one UFO sighting. The stories were hyped in the media as being due to one or more extraterrestrial beings that some claimed were later captured by the Brazilian military. Thanks, man.
Boom. Yes, thank you so much, Gaucho. Oh, I love Undead Gaucho so much. He's awesome. Yep. So yeah, now I think I was kind of right, but he's got this one down pat. Yeah, I remember James Fox, the documentary filmmaker, went there and actually spoke to firsthand witnesses, and they were like crying on camera. This event shook them so much. So I legitimately believe something highly strange happened there. They embrace it from what I remember. They've got like a statue of the creature that was supposedly sighted, and it's kind of their claim to fame there. And that happens a lot in this field, like certain places like Roswell or, you know, Mothman in Point Pleasant. It becomes such a cultural icon for that place. And Varginha is definitely one of those. Yeah, for sure. People go there to Brazil just to like revisit that event in their own minds. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Thank you, Undead Gaucho. You saved my butt on that one.
It's a big deal. It's a really big deal. And I think it's great that cities hold those historical events instead of forgetting about them or pushing them aside, because when a whole town or city is dedicated to it, it makes it alive and it keeps it relevant.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it makes it more acceptable too, you know?
Exactly. And on this note, I'm also fascinated about the transmedium concept of the Tic Tac objects. Do you think this represents a whole new dimension of the UFO technology, or could be conventional tech really by the far ahead behind the scenes? What's your feeling on that?
Both. I you know, this whole idea of transmedium travel is fairly new in, you know, the public. I know Luis Elizondo said these were the, you know, five or six observables we used in our program to try to determine you know, the capabilities of what we're seeing in these videos and stuff. And again, something like the Tic Tac, you know, we may not have seen it come out of the water, but from the witness testimony, we're given some context that there was activity going on in the water, that Commander David Fravor saw this thing go up, go down in, near the surface of the ocean, go back up. Or you look at the Aguadilla, Puerto Rico incident, like I mentioned earlier, the video of that. This thing went past the airport, went into the water. You can see it traveling underwater, comes back out, splits in two, and keeps traveling. So what sort of conventional aircraft can do that? I don't pretend to have an answer for that. So either it is from somewhere else, not on this planet, I mean, or it is some superior technology from another nation. It's very possible. And both of those are equally terrifying, for me at least. But yeah, I think with these observables that we're looking at, it really is helping to understand what could be conventional and what could not. And we're hearing the Pentagon stuff say, yep, that pyramid video, still unidentified, even though everyone wants to claim it was a drone or it's just, you know, a trick from the camera or what have you. It was an airplane out of focus. But if the Pentagon is saying, no, we've looked into all those answers, it's not that. You got to take that for what it's worth. So, yeah, transmedium is where it's at. And we're hearing more and more cases about that. So I'm excited to see where all that goes.
And we're definitely so lucky to be part of this generation, to be alive and still young, to be witnessing the government talking out about this and then having other people also talk out about it. So, you know, as being a part of this generation, what is it? There are just for a few times. Sorry, my bad. My words. Let me start over. So, no. You know, you get nervous after a while, like you just kind of forget and you're like, wait.
Trust me, as a former actor, yeah, I know what it's like for sure.
So, for the first time to be getting exposed to this topic in a serious way, given all the media coverage and trends. So, you know, we have amazing TV shows like Resident Alien. Have you seen that TV show? It's hilarious.
And I've heard it's amazing, yeah.
So we have Resident Alien, we have Debris, and these are all hit TV shows that are already asking for their other seasons. How are you working to reach out in particular to our generation to get them more involved in this topic?
I can use the prime example of the show I'm involved with on the CW network, Mysteries Decoded. For anyone who knows, the CW is a very specific network and demographic, a younger crowd, I must say. And we weren't sure how a UFO show or a mystery decoding show would work on their network. And we were also the first unscripted sort of reality anyway. Television show on the CW. So there was a lot riding on it. And we did a 1-hour special on Roswell. And
that was your first episode, right? Of season one.
Yep. It was our first episode. It was originally just supposed to be a little special, 1-hour special to go along with their fictional show called Roswell, New Mexico. They wanted to educate the public on the actual event and then go into their fictional realm of what they're doing. The ratings went through the roof and they ordered an entire series from that one episode. So there clearly was an interest. And, you know, the second season went over really well. And we filmed some more stuff that I can't talk about just yet. But it's exciting. And again, it's getting to an audience that's never really looked into this topic before. And that's awesome. I've had so many younger people reaching out to me over Instagram and Twitter. And all these social media platforms and being like, how do I get involved with this? And that's just awesome. The fact that people want to know how to get involved and do what you're doing and what I'm doing and all these awesome people around us. It makes it feel like this has all been worth it. That like, this isn't a stupid pie in the sky, forgive the pun, sort of thing that we're interested in. It's real. Like, this is happening. UFOs are real. But again, like we said, so many questions after that question of, are they real? So I think it's awesome. Debris sounds amazing. I'm getting, you know, contacted by so many TV shows that want to do UFO content right now. I know a lot of other UFO researchers are as well. So there's clearly a hunger and a curiosity for this topic, both in Hollywood and in the people who watch Hollywood. So I think it's a perfect marriage. Media and entertainment is the number one way to get information out there. So more UFO shows, the better, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And some people believe that a lot of alien shows that we're watching now could possibly be soft disclosure, like in the TV show Debris. Who knows? Maybe it already happened. The thing is that we don't know. Average people like us. So that's exciting. And I know that your show is going to have a season 3. When can we see that? When is that coming out?
I don't have specifics on that yet, just because we were delayed so much during COVID. I was just able to finish an episode that was supposed to be done a year ago. If I had to guess, I'm going to say late summer or possibly early fall of this year. I know most of it has been filmed and is done. My episodes are done. And I'm excited to see. So I wish I had specifics on that, but it's coming. And we looked into some really cool stuff. Like, that we're not talking the surface level Roswell stuff here. We dug deep and there's some really cool stuff coming. So yeah, I hope people will check it out when it does air.
I'll be there. And I'd like to get you to relay for your viewers one of the most compelling cases, maybe even one that keeps you up at night, that you covered either in the show or in your books.
That's a great question. Probably the one case that I always go to that really impacted me personally was in Detroit, Michigan in 2005. A woman named Patty reached out to me and told me her story, and I was sold like the minute she told me this. 2005, she went to walk her dogs out on her property. She goes outside, dogs won't come off the porch. They're scared of something. So she thinks maybe there's an animal out there or someone on the property. So she kind of goes down again, dogs won't leave the porch, and she looks up and there it is, a huge triangular shaped UFO just floating above her. Effortlessly, no sound, nothing. She yells for her daughter to come outside. The daughter comes out and they both see it. They're staring up at this massive triangle UFO over them. And Patty recalled being very in awe and euphoric while looking up at this thing. And she comments to her daughter while she's staring at it. She's like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. Like, it's not making a single sound. What is this? What's going on? And she looks over at her daughter, and her daughter's on the ground, like in the fetal position, covering her ears and saying how unbearably loud the craft was. So that really shook me. I wasn't expecting that, that these two individuals were looking at the same thing and having completely different perceptions and realities of what was going on in that moment. It's a crazy story. The thing shot out of sight. And what's interesting about this one, Christina, is it wasn't just UFOs. After that, like, the doors flung wide open for this family. They had poltergeist activity going on in their house. They were seeing weird beings, going through their house at night. All this crazy, terrifying stuff. I mean, I remember their electricity went out and the electrician came to fix it. And he's up there, you know, trying to do his thing and rewiring everything. And he looks up and there's a UFO.
Wow.
And we have documentation of that guy recalling this. And he immediately, like, got off his ladder, got down, and told Patty, I'm out of here. I'll send someone else. But good luck with that. And pretty crazy. It really affected this family for good and bad. They kept having weird experiences and they didn't know what to make of it. And it kind of drew the family apart. But really? They've since kind of reconnected, accepted these things. Some have moved on in their lives, some have not. And then I actually got the opportunity to meet Patty in Michigan at a conference. And I did my talk and I came down. I talked about her experience in the talk, not knowing she was in the audience. And she came up just like tears in her eyes and hugged me. And like, it was just one of those moments where I'm like, you know, an email is one thing. or like talking on the phone, but actually meeting these people and seeing how these events affect them and putting like faces to the names. That's where it's at. That's when you get the real, true, raw, vulnerable stories from these people. So Patty and I are like such good friends now. We talk all the time and she's no closer to answers, but I'm there to try to help her at least just work through it. And again, if I could just listen, that's all. That's it for some of these people.
And how common do you think this is, these kinds of happenings? I mean, this stuff doesn't really get covered by the mainstream media. And you said it was in Detroit, which is a very populated city. Did anyone else have these sightings or sightings similar to this?
No, there were other people. I specifically remember Patty went to like a town hall that was going on there because so much UFO activity was happening in, I should clarify, it was like in a suburb right outside of Detroit. Mm-hmm. So it was a little more open and whatnot and not as congested. But I remember there was a town hall where like investigators from MUFON and whatnot were there to hear everyone's stories. And Patty was one of those people who went and had photographic evidence. That was another big thing. Like, it's just a story until we have other evidence. And she gave it to me. She had photos of the triangle, which were pretty startling. I can try to get those over to you after this if you want to share them on social media. But it was real. It happened. And it changed this family forever. So, yeah, I think it's more common than we think. It's just a matter of people not reporting their sightings. That's the issue. You know,
yeah.
The late great Stanton Friedman used to do conferences when he said, how many people have seen a UFO? And like 100 people, 100% of the people raised their hands. They said, how many of you reported it? And maybe like 2% still had their hands raised. So if you see something, as we say in New York on the subway, if you see something, say something. And I think that's what we need more of, is people being comfortable enough to report it, you know, seek out MUFON, look at NUFORC, the National UFO Reporting Center. Talk to Christina, talk to me, like just tell somebody so that we can preserve these stories and build a bigger argument for the government of this is going on at an alarming rate. And we're ready. We're ready to know because so many people are experiencing it.
But, you know, for some people, based off their status, it can just be a little bit harder to talk about, maybe a little more nerve-wracking because your job is on the line. Have you interviewed anyone, civilian or military, that has had repeated abduction experiences? And can any of them relay details to you?
Yes. Yeah. I do cover the controversial abduction topic in the book. I've got several chapters dedicated to it. And repeated experiences. Absolutely. There's one gentleman who lived in Harlem here in New York City, who back in the 80s had an initial abduction experience, which terrified him. And, you know, here's this tough dude living in Harlem, has been through everything you can possibly imagine. And the first time he saw a being at the foot of his bed, he like put the covers over his head and started crying. And he was so scared. He went on to have repeated events happen in his life. He claimed that he saw symbols in these experiences that these beings were sharing with him, kind of as their language. And he remembers seeing prayer hands with a lightning bolt through them. So this dude finally accepted in his own interpretation of this event, these events, that I got to do something with prayer and like healing and stuff. So he actually became a minister or a pastor, what have you, at a Unitarian church, moved out of New York, moved down south, opened this church, and like, talk about an event changing your life. This was a born and bred New Yorker, and they never leave. I could tell you that for a fact. I work with them almost every day. These people are lifers, and this dude got out of there and moved, and it changed his life. So yes. Abductions can be very terrifying and traumatic for individuals, no matter what those abductions actually are. I can't tell you, but some good, some bad. There's other people I talk to who heavy depression, turn to alcohol, drugs, or thought they were crazy. And it's tough. It's a messy topic. It's controversial. We could pretend to know what's going on, but I don't think we really do. And this dude's still trying to figure out what's going on with him, but he's got that higher power now to kind of keep him keep him going and infuse that into his faith. So yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
Thank you so much, Ryan, for being a part of this live cast with me today at Shifting the Paradigm. Can you tell people where they can find you on social media?
Absolutely. I'm on Twitter at Somewhere Skies, Instagram at Somewhere Skies Pod. The book is on Amazon. You can get it there. And somewhereintheskies.com. You can find everything there, including my coffee, if you're really a coffee fiend. And yeah, everything I do is there and at The Debrief. I hope people check out all my articles over there. But no, thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Christina. This was my pleasure. So much fun.
Thank you so much. And thank you everyone that joined this live cast today and was all interactive in the comments. Make sure to hit the like button, subscribe, and check out The Debrief tomorrow, where I'll be posting an interview with James Fox along with an article that you definitely do not want to miss. I'll see you guys soon. And remember, keep your eyes on the skies.